Hello, my beautiful woman ink listeners. Welcome back. My guest this week is the incredible Nicole Wegman. Nicole is the founder and CEO of Ring Concierge, an NYC-based D2C luxury jeweler that has built an impressive company on a bespoke bridal business alongside a more accessible fine jewelry collection. Nicole launched the company back in 2013 when she was in her late 20s after realizing the diamond and jewelry industries have historically been dominated by men. She was profitable from year one, and over the past 8+ years, she has never taken outside funding. Ring Concierge aims to be the Tiffany's of this generation. I absolutely loved chatting with Nicole. She is just such an incredible entrepreneur, but I love how down to earth she is. I use her as a reference all the time of just brands that connect with their community well. And it's truly a testament to when you just prioritize being authentic and transparent, you will win if you have a good product. Like, Nicole is just such a quintessential entrepreneur. I loved all of the bits that she gave in this episode. I can't wait for you guys to listen. Now, let's get on over to my conversation with Nicole.
Welcome to the Woman Ink Podcast. This is the place for the new generation of women looking to lead the life of their absolute dreams. I'm your host, Jenna Toddy, entrepreneur, life coach, and strategist for modern businesswomen and entrepreneurs. I am a city girl, sriracha lover, and that friend who will hype you up when you forget how powerful you truly are. I am on a mission to make Women Inc. the most powerful network of women who are leveling up, owning what they want, and becoming who they've always wanted to be. Have you ever wondered what it would look like if you went all in on yourself? No turning back. If so, you are in the right place, my girl. Let's get started.
Hi, Nicole. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, how are you?
Good. I'm so excited. Okay, so I want to rewind. I want to go before Ring Concierge days and ask you, one, what were you doing? And then two, go into the inspiration to start Ring Concierge.
Yeah, so I always thought I wanted to be in the fashion industry. So I went to Cornell and my major was fiber science and apparel design, which is a very specific major because I thought that is what I want to do. And when I graduated, I started at Macy's in product development. And I specifically worked on women's sweaters and did that for a few years. What was really cool about that job is I learned kind of the ins and outs of product development. And, you know, that skill set is transferable. And I also learned what it means to work with vendors and to negotiate costs and all of that good stuff. Then from Macy's, I went to Bloomingdale's, and there I did the executive training program for buying because I thought, okay, product development is great, but I want to kind of understand the business side of retail. So went into buying and specifically focused on women's apparel online, which, you know, this not to date myself was like 14 years ago. So it doesn't sound that long ago, but e-com was really just starting to blow up at that point. So learning consumer behavior and how to write buys and, you know, how to maximize online sales and what's different online versus in retail stores. So that's really the background I had and thought that was the industry I was going to stay in. Cut to, I was 26 and my now husband and I had been together for 8 or 9 years at that point. And I started to put the pressure on to get engaged, you know, like most women in my situation would. My friends were getting engaged. I'm like, they haven't even been dating as long as we have. Like, what's going on TikTok?
Yep.
So forced him to go to the Diamond District with me in New York City. I don't know, Jenna, if you've been to the Diamond District in New York City before.
Oh, yes.
Unpleasant, I would say, is the kind way to describe the experience on 47th Street in New York City. It's, you know, all of these men standing on the street, haggling you, saying, are you buying? Are you selling? And you don't know what store to walk into. They all kind of look the same. You have no idea if the diamond you're looking at is a ripoff or the right quality. The settings are all like not cute. And, you know, I looked at my husband, and I was like, is this how people are spending tens of thousands of dollars? This is crazy to me. So quit my job and started to try to figure out the industry a little bit and came up with the concept of Ring Concierge, which the concept originally, and this is still a big piece of who we are, was to create a fine jewelry company at that time, specifically in bridal, that actually catered towards how millennial women want to shop. And that was the concept, which is a really simple concept in theory and kind of a no-brainer because, you know, we're the end user, especially when it comes to engagement rings. So the fact that we weren't even thought about and how we'd like to shop is pretty ridiculous.
Yes, it really is. I feel like it's also kind of like a mob industry where it's like very family owned.
Yes, it is all about families and relationships. And it makes sense a little bit because of the price point of a diamond. You have to trust the different partners you're working with when you're viewing diamonds and sending things on memo to be reviewed. So it a little bit makes sense, but you definitely don't have to come from a diamond family to do this. And so there was all of this antiquated thinking because it was these men passing these companies down to the next generation, to their son, and then their son passes it down to their grandson. And nobody had ever really thought about what could this look like as opposed to what has this industry always looked like. And so, you know, it may have appeared in the beginning that I was at a disadvantage for not being in the industry at all, but I actually think it worked in my favor that I had a totally different background that specialized in retail and product development and kind of how women were shopping, and then took those learnings and applied it to the jewelry industry.
Yes. I always say being a buyer is the best background because you learn everything.
Were you a buyer?
No, I owned a fashion agency. So I worked with buyers every day and they were always so smart.
Well, it sounds like this really glamorous job where you just go shopping with someone else's money all day, which look, there's a piece of it that's really cool. You're going to runway shows and you're reviewing the latest trends, but the core job is sitting in front of an Excel sheet. Yes. And, you know, developing these really important skills in terms of budgeting and how to move product. And if it's not moving, what do you do in consumer behavior and trends? And really 99% of my day was looking at a spreadsheet. And so I totally agree with you. I think it's a really interesting job that can set someone up for success in a lot of different roles later in life.
Yes. When I first went to the Revolve office, I was like, how is this the office? It's just like everyone at computers just sitting.
Oh, yeah, that's the job. The going and viewing the shows, that's 5% of the job.
Yeah. Okay. So you have this idea and a way to do it differently. How did you start the brand in the early days? What was the process of the early days of building the brand?
So I had $2,000 that I was going to spend on starting the company, which now where we're at today and how you look at how other entrepreneurs might start their company sounds silly and ridiculous. But this was a little bit before this huge everyone wants to be an entrepreneur trend and fundraising and these unicorn companies. So I was definitely, you know, amongst my friends, the only one that was trying to start a company. So I didn't know any better. I read a book called The Lean Startup and it said, test a bunch of stuff and spend very little money. And I said, okay, I can do that, right? So I took $2,000 and bought a URL and went onto LegalZoom and got a business license and kind of whatever you need legally to start a company, founded an LLC. That was it. And then I went to the Diamond District and asked two people that I had interacted with when I was trying to find my ring that seemed somewhat normal. Can you help me learn this industry? I'm trying to figure it out. And you seem to, you know, send differently. You seem to be a normal person who might understand the value in what I'm offering and ask them to mentor me. And in exchange, I split the profits with them in the beginning years. And really, I ended up just shifting towards this one person I ended up really working with for a few years. And he taught me the ins and outs of the industry. I also took courses at GIA, which is the institute that grades all the diamonds to try to learn the technicalities. And that was great and important, but honestly, the better learnings were with this mentor and figuring out how does the back-end industry of the work, how do you deal with clients? What do clients care about? How do I price things? How do I sell things? And so the beginning years was really just working with him and figuring out as I go. And I just did engagement rings myself with the clients, hence the name Ring Concierge. And at the time, I thought that's what the entire business would be.
I love this. Okay, so you start building this brand. And what was the point where you're like, I have a real company. This is actually really working.
That's a great question. There wasn't really this one defining moment where it no longer was doing this by myself and all of a sudden I'm a real company. You know, we are going to be 10 years old this fall. So even though part of it feels like it happened so fast, the other part of it feels like it took a decade to build this, you know? But yeah. I'd say when I really started to build out the team, it started to feel different. And when we launched the website, which sells all the other fine jewelry that we offer, and shifted away from only selling bridal by myself, you know, it did evolve into a very real company. You know, now we are 65 people. We have more than one store. You know, we still have e-com. So it's definitely evolved, but it took a decade to get there. There was nothing that felt like, oh, you know, boom, I have a company now. That, unfortunately, I never really had that kind of overnight success moment in my head, at least.
Yeah. Something I love that you guys do is you've built the best community. Everyone feels, Nicole, like they are your friend. And my friend was like, ask her about Zoe. I'm like, how do you know her daughter's name? It's so funny to me. But I think that's one, so smart to include your customers. But how did this idea of building the community online come into play?
It was in the beginning, slightly an accident, and then has since very much evolved into a business strategy. So I used Instagram very early on in launching the company. And this was absolutely before anyone in the jewelry industry was on Instagram because, you know, like I said, it's all these kind of older men. So they were surely not on social. I mean, this was back before Instagram even had business accounts. It was just people using it for personal accounts. So I wanted to try to grow the business without spending money, you know, because I only had the $2,000. And so my marketing was just taking pictures and putting them on Instagram of the jewelry I was making. And I used myself as the model because I'm free. So why would I ever pay for a model?
And gorgeous.
Like, why not? This hand's good enough. You know, I used my own hand, kept things cheap. And so by default, people started to associate me with the brand. They recognized my face. And then I was also the person working with them if they came in to buy a ring from me. So I organically became the face of the brand. Then during the pandemic, and I'd always shown myself on Instagram and done stories a little bit, but during the pandemic, when we were all stuck at home, I started to really show more of my personal life because what else are we showing? I wasn't in the office. I couldn't show the office. So stories started to evolve to be about me at home, you know, my husband, my friends, whatever it was that I was doing when we couldn't come into the office. And we instantly saw what an increase we had in engagement, how many DMs we were getting, how many questions people wanted to know everything I was wearing, what color was my nail polish, what am I eating? And we realized, you know, the marketing team and I realized, wow, we really have something here. Even more, there's even more power behind this than we knew we had. This could be something really amazing. And so since then, you know, it's been many years since the beginning of the pandemic, luckily, we've built in showing my lifestyle and personality as a very intentional and strategic piece of our Instagram stories because we know it builds community and it fosters trust in an industry that you might not trust otherwise because you see exactly who is talking to you and say, I stand behind these products. You know, I helped design them and you feel better about the brand you're buying from. And separately, I just think it's fun and entertaining. Nobody really wants to follow a brand account that just shows pictures of products all day. I think that's so boring. I don't follow brands for that reason. We follow influencers, we follow our friends, we follow celebrities because they're telling us stories, they're entertaining us. So I always try to keep that in mind of not losing that entertainment and connection component that does keep our followers so engaged.
How do you manage all of it? Because getting all of that content, you make it look really easy. But when we're trying to shoot content for my brand, I'm like, this is a lot of work. You really have to plan this, I feel like. How do you set the schedule for that?
Honestly, not well. I think the team tries to build in blocks of times where I really focus on it. And then some meeting runs over and I blow through those. It's definitely not as organized as I would like it. Definitely not as organized as the social team would like it. I grab stuff when I can grab it. I try to figure out how to throw stuff up at somewhat optimal time slots in stories, but it's not always the case. And it's just, that's the reality. But I think that's also kind of why people like following us is it doesn't feel too prescriptive. Yeah. It really is whatever I'm doing, wearing that day, that moment. So I think the balance honestly is very hard and I haven't figured that out. I would love to figure it out, but people forget I'm also the CEO of a company. So the Instagram piece is certainly a big piece of what I have to focus on, but it's actually not my core job. And that's why the balance is so tricky.
Yeah. Can we talk about the burglary situation and how you leverage this? I'm obsessed with this story.
So we have a store in the West Village and we got news early in the morning, one morning, that the store had been burglarized the night before. Nobody was in it. You know, nobody got hurt. It happened overnight. And obviously this wasn't great news. You know, we were upset. We had to shut down the store. The glass was broken. And we put an Instagram story out that just, you know, just a black screen with text that said, the West Village store is closed today. You know, because we were burglarized, you know, nobody was injured. We'll keep you posted or something. And it wasn't even meant to be a marketing play. It was literally meant to just be an update. That story, and I believe this is still the case, was the most DM'd and shared Instagram story we've ever put up. And so we're looking at this, we're like, wow, people are like very invested in our burglary. Is there something we could do with this? Because the team, I don't like to dwell on things. Very little upsets me. You'll never see me cry about something. You don't see me yell about something. That's not how I operate. I'm pretty even keeled. And I always try to look at everything about how can we learn from this? How can we turn this into an opportunity? I think that's the only way you can ever grow. So there's a lot of minds on the marketing team that also operate and think that way. And Tori and I looked at each other and we're like, ooh, there's something here. There's a play here. And Tori very quickly got all of these like faux newspapers printed talking about like extra Ring concierge was burglarized. We printed out these tote bags that had this burglar image covered in diamonds that we had just so happened to shoot up like a few months before. And we're going to use it for a later campaign having nothing to do with the real burglary. And turned over the whole website to be burglar themed. And we rebuilt the store and had it opened in 2 days. And when we reopened for the weekend, we had this huge burglar campaign and everybody came in, got a tote bag and newspapers, and it got all of this press. And I think the point was, you know, A, we were transparent. And I think that's why the story got shared, because most brands would never put it out there that they had been robbed. You know, they would just put a sign on their door, call it a day. So we're always very transparent. We always like to talk about what's happening. What are we hiding? We have nothing to hide. So people felt really invested. And then the other piece of it is we turned it into something positive and we reopened the store in 2 days because the team is incredible. So it ended up being what could have been and should have been really negative, ended up turning into this really positive, exciting brand moment. And I think that's why people love this, to talk about this burglary, because we took it in a direction that was really uplifting, actually, and oddly.
I love it. I cannot believe you had that photo shoot ready.
How perfect. We didn't even really know what we wanted to use it for, but we thought the theme was cool. So we're like, let's shoot this girl breaking into our safe and, you know, foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing, for real. That's amazing. Can you walk us through, what is your typical day like as CEO?
Oh my God, every day is very different. I think that's, for me, my typical day is there is no typical day. I think CEOs at other companies would probably have very different answers to that. But because I'm the face of the brand and there's the Instagram component and I have to do a lot for press and I have to travel for press, my days are wild. But let's pretend I'm not on an airplane or, you know, filming something for live TV. Let's just pretend I'm a normal person one day. I get up and I always spend my mornings with my daughter, Zoe, and I intentionally come into the office late. I usually don't come in until about 10, and everybody knows they can't put meetings on before 10 because that's my time with her. From 7 a.m. to 10 a.m., I'm very focused on her. And I also try to get ready during all of that, which is just pure chaos. But, you know, what used to be a 1 hour routine to get ready is now a 3 hour routine. And then my day is filled back to back with meetings. It's all I do is just meetings all day with all the different teams, external parties, making decisions, you know, challenging people is, you know, are we spending enough on paid to hit the revenue goals we have? Kind of the not sexy pieces of the job. It's really what all of my meetings are about. And I usually head home from the office around 6:30. But like I said, that's like a dream day as opposed to a day where I'm jumping on an airplane to go film a live TV segment or, you know, filming my whole apartment for Instagram, which is always sprinkled throughout my week.
I love it. Is your husband just, Nicole's off doing what her thing? Is he super?
I mean, he's so used to it by now. Like I said, I'm a decade into this tornado of a life I've created for myself. So it's usually, he also has his own company and he's busy as well. So we're usually just like each morning updating each other. Where are you going to, are you, do you have a dinner plan? Are you in New York City tomorrow? Like, it's just a quick update. And we're both just used to kind of a very chaotic schedule. Yeah,
I love it. That's the dream. How would you say, like, a decade of running this company, how would you say that you have had to grow as a woman, like on a personal level, to be able to run a company at this scale?
So many different ways. And I think what is required of me to run the company has evolved as the company's grown. In the beginning years, it definitely took kind of a fake it until you make it mentality and a false sense of confidence, because I was trying to enter an industry that, quite frankly, I didn't really belong in. And that was really important in the beginning in order for me to break in and start getting access to the diamonds and having clients believe in me. Then it shifted towards, when building out the team, learning how to manage people, which I had never done before. I never in my careers at Macy's or Bloomingdale's did I really have direct reports. I was more junior than that. So for me, that was a big challenge. The managing people and HR component is not a natural skill set of mine. It's not my strong suit. Everyone here knows that. I raised my hand and first one to say I should never be in charge of HR. That is just not what I'm good at. Marketing, I'm good at product, I'm good at branding. I'm not good at that kind of stuff. So that was hard for me for a while with my first, let's say, 5 to 8 employees when they all reported directly into me and I never navigated any of the issues we were having. I didn't really know what a correct employment contract should look like, and figuring all that out was tough. Now I think, you know, what is required of me is showcasing strong leadership, because we are 65 people. Not everybody knows me personally anymore. You know, it used to be the team had all been to my apartment and we would get dinner together and they just knew everything about how my brain worked and my life, and we were so cohesive. And now I have to evolve into being a leader for a much bigger organization, especially preparing to grow even further and showing the team they have a strong leader and somebody who, yes, was scrappy in the beginning and is funny on Instagram, but is also has serious business acumen and can take this company to the size we want. So it's definitely a shift in what is required of me as the company hits different milestones and stages.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And I feel like the beginning stages, a lot of people love. And then once they get to a much bigger company, it's a completely different environment.
It is. And there's pieces of the beginning that I definitely miss. You know, the pressure is much lower in the beginning. You don't have as many eyes looking at you. You can make a lot more mistakes with it having a smaller impact to, you know, company performance. And you kind of have to, right? That you test and learn. That's all. And we still do that. But in the beginning, you can do it very freely. Now, we still want to test and learn. But we want to make sure, okay, we have 65 people whose salaries depend on us making smart decisions. So it's not as, you can't be very frivolous in how you're operating the company. And so there is a piece of that exciting, let's just figure it out, that you kind of lose once the company gets to a certain size.
Yeah, yeah. On the days where you just feel like you don't really want to do it, where you're just like don't have energy or you're burnt out or whatever it is, how do you get yourself back to yourself?
I am very much a keep moving forward type of person. There are a million days that I don't want to do it. The biggest piece that I don't love doing is having to fulfill the Instagram needs on days where you just want to kind of look like crap and be in your pajamas and not have to talk to a camera in front of 500,000 people. You know, those are the days that I think it's really tough to say, too bad, so sad. I'm the only one that can do this. Figure it out, Nicole. But I think I'm naturally a very hard worker and very driven. And that usually kicks in enough to get me through those days. I don't have any great tips or tricks that are, you know, could be, you know, I don't have a motivational song. Maybe I need to figure that out. But I usually just force myself to keep moving forward. And then typically the next day I'm back and I feel good again and it's a blip. But those days happen all the time. That's for sure.
Caffeine. Do you do coffee?
Of course.
Yeah. That's a
lot. I'm starting today.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, coffee. Keep going. What are you most excited about dreaming of the future of Bring Concierge?
I think what's really exciting, well, everything. There's so much opportunity for us to continue taking market share. It's a very big industry. It's a $90 billion industry, but it's very fragmented. It's still very old school. You know, think about the way you shop for jewelry is not probably that different than the way your mom shopped for jewelry, and just shifting the experience people have and where and why they're buying jewelry. So we have a lot in the works there. But what's really exciting is physical retail expansion. Like I said, we have 2 stores in New York City. We definitely have plans for more and kind of changes as to what those stores look like and offer. Can't share too much yet, but to me, that's really exciting, is taking what we do so well digitally and what we do so well in terms of community building on Instagram, and how do you then take that and put it into a physical retail presence? And what does that look like? Because it's never really been done in jewelry before, that's for sure. And it's only sometimes executed the right way in fashion, although typically fashion brands are a little bit better, you know, at figuring all of that out. So that to me is what's really exciting. And so that is why one of our biggest focuses when designing stores and thinking about the future of what our stores should be like is to remove that feeling you get when you walk into every other jewelry store. Yes. Even now with like my success in life, I would be uncomfortable walking into certain jewelry stores on Fifth Ave. I feel like they would look me up and down and they would judge me regardless of whether I can afford it. Even now, like I wouldn't do it. I'd be like, oh, why would I go in there? It's going to be like, eh. So we never, ever want our customer to feel that way. We want you to feel so welcome to walk in. And if you don't want to buy anything, great. That's fine. Browse, chat, take pictures, leave. We're not judging you. That's part of the shopping process. We fully get it. So I am with you. That is not how it should feel walking in to spend money. That's a terrible feeling.
It is. Oh, I can't wait for this. Okay, Nicole, this has been amazing. I have one more question for you, which is, what would be your number one piece of advice for a woman who's wanting to start her own business?
Oh my God, 5 million. But if I had to pick just one that I feel is most relevant to what I'm going through today, it would be to trust your gut. And I know everybody says that, but I think for women especially, it's tough to not let other voices kind of seep into how you're thinking about things, especially when you might have other experts in the room or someone who's older than you or somebody who's more senior than you in terms of their career. And it's very difficult to not let their opinions start to sway what you think is right and what you think you should be doing in your business. But you're a founder or would like to be a founder for a reason. And most people and most personalities and most brains are not good as founders. They can't do it. You know, it's a very specific person. So maybe you're a masochist, who knows? I don't really recommend it unless you really want to do it. It's hard. But if you're that type of person that wants to be a founder, you've got something in you that you should always trust your gut, because the best founders in the world, if you think about the Elon Musks and the Steve Jobs and all of those types of founders, you know, polarizing as they may be, they always stuck to what they believed and made sure their brand always really came, like their core beliefs came out in their brand. And I really believe that's why all of those types of companies are successful as they are, because the founders really stuck to their beliefs and their gut and didn't let other people sway their direction.
So good. I love that answer. Thank you so much. So nice to meet you.
Likewise. Thank you for having me.
Okay. I hope you enjoyed this episode and are feeling so fired up to go out there and create that business or side hustle that's been on your to-do list, you know, a little bit longer than you care to admit. It is never too late to make the first step towards the life you want more than anything else. If you haven't already, make sure you are subscribed to the show so that you never miss an episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, keep becoming the woman of your wildest dreams.